Hello, world.
Are we talking about the Roman Empire?
Greek, actually.
No, you don't. He doesn't get it.
Oh, man.
I don't get it at all. Please explain.
Oh, because at like the time of Jesus, the Roman Empire was the world. Like, they considered anything outside of the world, and this was like true of a lot of people, not the world.
Damn. Ghosts out of the Roman Empire. I went to space, y'all.
That's why
we are literally less than 30 seconds in, and we are knee deep in minutia.
I don't get it. Just kidding.
Okay. Well, okay. Maybe. All right. Let's try again. Right. Here we go.
Three. All right. Two. One. Yeah.
What's up, everybody? We are Exposure Compensation.
Compensating for our exposure.
Yep. That's for sure.
I just take that exposure slider and it goes all the way up.
I go all the way up.
You're the anti Jared Polin who turns the contrast slider all the way up. But you're like, I like solid white boxes. So I turn the exposure all the way up in Lightroom.
Sometimes I put the blacks down so I get a little bit of like just a weird gray.
I like my photos bright and my women brighter.
Ooh. That's kind of bad.
That was terrible.
I meant intellectually. Jeez, you guys. What the heck? Get your guys' mind out of the racial gutter.
Ooh.
Ooh. You mean the gender?
I'm sure. A little confused.
What was racial about that?
I don't know how you guys took it. That would have been bad. I said bright.
I think it just sounded bad. We weren't really sure.
I know. It just is like, you're like, I like my exposure bright and my women brighter. For somehow, that mean that just is, I don't know. It's uncomfortable in today's environment.
I always shoot a stop and a half overexposed.
My mom calls me her son. I must be really bright, like intelligent.
Not sure if you understand the spelling on that one, bud.
I don't. Oh, okay.
Oh man. Oh.
So on a little less weird news, I started a new Instagram account, Brewing with Pookatan. It's my coffee Ooh. Instagram.
Ooh.
Where you find sick product reviews of coffee that will probably eventually be sold out by the time I'm actually recognized as an account on that account.
Well, I feel like a lot of people are accounting on that.
Yeah.
So like, what are you going to use this new Instagram for, Peyton?
So I'm really into the like specialty coffees, so like light roasted coffee that you can just taste all of like the actual like flavor in the beans. And I'm just going to use that to like kind of post things that I think are really unique about certain coffees or unique about certain coffees that shops serve or just shops in general, particularly in the Minneapolis area. But I'm definitely going to do some things on some equipment, which obviously can like I can just buy that online. So it'll be accessible to everybody via online, and coffees that you can buy online and are accessible online and talk about them and how they taste and my opinion on them.
Yeah. And like when we travel, like when we see you guys and we go to Loyal Coffee, hashtag sponsored. Right. Just kidding.
We wish. Hey, Loyal Coffee. We have actually done a lot of work on this podcast on your premises.
Actually, we kind of got the idea there too.
We kind of did.
Yeah. It was actually in Rocky Mountain National Park.
Well, that's true. That's where it was seated, but we kind of put the actual idea together when we were there that day after, I think.
Yep, that's absolutely accurate.
Loyal's got amazing Americanos, though. Like, oh my gosh.
So, yeah, we're going to get like real local on you here real quick and give you a lowdown on our favorite coffee shop in Colorado Springs, Loyal Coffee.
It's super white inside. That doesn't sound bad at all.
That sounds kind of bad.
It sounds really bad.
It's a bright, vibrant work environment with nice hardwood and marble.
Do we mean bright Ooh. As in intelligent or no?
Wow, full circle.
All right.
Wow.
Full send or full circle?
All right, Tob, get us into photo news.
All right. So probably the biggest news, in my opinion, was that Sigma announced a 14 to 24 2.8 lens. Pretty exciting.
Yeah.
For Canon sure. mount, of course.
And Nikon.
And Nikon. Oh, yeah. Nikon's cool, too. Just, you know.
Mainly Canon.
Do people really shoot Nikon, though?
Jared Polin.
No, Jared Polin switched
you
to Sony, didn't he?
Just made so many people angry.
But yeah, I'm like, I guess one thing I really did wish I dislike about Sony, I guess, in all honesty, is the fact that we can't use some of the Sigma glass. It's not even because it's like, oh, it's a cheaper lens that I, because I can't afford the better glass that Sony has. It's just, I wish I could use the Sigma glass. And it's cool things like this, a 14 to 24, which in, if you think about like the Trinity, kind of connects everything evenly, and 14 millimeters is pretty wide even compared to like a 16 to 35.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. Like the difference, but like as you get up in millimeters, the difference gets much smaller. When you're down in the teens and lower 20s, the difference between 1 millimeter is like huge. Like the difference between 15 and 14 is actually quite a bit.
I would say it's noticeable. I wouldn't say it's like quite a bit, but you notice with only 1 millimeter. So
yeah, like this might be at 50, but it could also be at 51 and I wouldn't know.
Oh yeah, nothing like that.
Yeah,
right. Yeah, no, yeah, no, nothing like that. Once, by the time you get to what, between like 45 and 50, like there's not a whole lot, you can't tell a whole lot of difference. And then like, holy cow, once you like get into your super tellies, like, you know, the difference between honestly 400 and 500 is in some ways very similar to 15 and 14.
Oh yeah, that's fair.
Yeah.
I've noticed especially with like the 70 to 200, like a 35 and a 200 millimeter difference isn't that much. Like people don't notice the focus breathing problems on a lot of the lenses because of that exact reason.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the other, I would say, pretty significant news this that came around this week is probably Fuji's first real pro camera, the X-H1, was leaked with 4K internal log recording in 4K, which the X-T2 lacked, and just a bunch of other tweaks that really make it a little bit more professional. Do you think that Fuji will finally start taking over the market like we all know it's going to?
Mm-hmm. I kind of wish, actually. Like, if out of all the people I've thought about switching to, or not people, but companies, Fuji's been the kind of one I've almost wanted to switch to because they do have really nice glass. They kind of transfer everything over, even though it's not full frame. Mm-hmm. They have like the 56 1.2, mm-hmm. which is equivalent to like an 85 1.2. They have great colors, all the like kind of unique things about Fuji. It's just that their cameras so far have just been okay. They're not quite professional.
Mm-hmm. And I've heard a lot of people had big reliability issues with the X-T2. Like after a year of usage, they had to send it in to get repaired once or twice. And so if this camera can solve some of those issues, that would be amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I don't know. My biggest critique of it, though, is it seems like it's just way more video oriented. I don't see a ton of specs that are really pushing it to the center of like for me, a portrait photographer, that the X-T2 didn't have, though. I don't know. What are you guys' opinions on that? Like, is this a camera you'd take out and go, well, for landscapes, it's maybe a little different, but Kemper, you do portrait stuff. Toby, I know you've experimented with it. So, and Peyton, you've done a little bit.
Yeah, I just have a hard time still. I mean, like you said, Fuji is doing what it can to kind of compensate for being APS-C, but I just, you know, for anything other than some, you know, kind of general basic photography, and I would argue sports photography is actually superior in APS-C, but with everything else, like I just, with all the bells and whistles, I'd still probably take a very basic full frame camera out before it.
That's my problem with like even just having an A7, very outdated, old, kind of just a good camera though. It's not great. I would just very call it enthusiast at this point, but I can get what I want out of it, and I know the camera.
Mm-hmm. I guess that on that note, talking about decently priced cameras that do the job, we have all put together some different setups that we're going to go over for some people who might be looking for a semi-budget, but still pretty serious, around a $2,000 price point. A few setups that we've gotten an idea for. I guess since we're talking about portraiture, Brandon, what is your portrait setup for $2,000?
Okay, well, this is horrible because I just mashed on Fuji for not being a perfect portraiture setup. But with a $2,000 budget constraint, what I kind of put together was a Fuji X Pro 2 with the Fuji 56 1.2, with a huge emphasis on the Fuji 56 1.2.
You can get that for under $2,000?
Yeah, it's $1,000 for the body and $1,000 for the lens.
Wow, that's pretty nice setup there. And does the Fuji XT, the Fuji X Pro 2, it still has the X-Trans sensor, right? It's not one of the more conventional ones.
No, you're correct. And it's 24 megapixels. It's not quite as good as the X-T2, I don't think, but it's still, like, as far as a good portrait camera, which is a 24 megapixel camera, it works pretty well for the job, I think, for a budget. I mean, if I could take, like, I don't know, an A9 or A7 R Mark III, I would definitely. But if you have $2,000 to spend on a camera and want to go into Fuji, I would totally do this setup.
Yeah, and you could even make it a little cheaper by going with the X Pro 1, which can be had for probably like $500 at this point. So you could shave $500 off that, spend that on a general purpose lens, or just save the money. That is another option. You lose some pixels, though.
Yeah, and I feel like the sensor isn't as kind of updated, obviously, but it's not quite the same.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the setup that I put together for $2,000 is the original Canon 6D. And if you can find it, the Canon 85mm f1.2. I was able to find a few options for significantly under $1,000, like $850. Or, you know, if you can't find that one, also the Sigma 85 f1.4 would work as well.
Sorry, what body did you say?
The Canon 6D Mark I.
Okay, interesting.
You get that full frame, razor thin depth of field, and just gorgeous buttery background.
That was actually my second one. I was trying to do something that wasn't quite the, like, I don't mean bland, but kind of the bland option.
Oh wow, that's such a great compliment.
You're welcome.
So, for my portrait, $2,000 setup, I actually went with the Sony a7 II and Sony 85 1.8, so very similar to what Brandon has, just with a slightly updated sensor.
That's fair.
I was able to find it for $2,000, so I just feel like that's for, you get full frame, you get a really good, you could go with the Sigma, with the MC, the Sigma 85 1.4 with the Sigma NC11 adapter, but that's going to add about $400. So
yeah, also, just so everybody knows, the Sony first gen bodies do not work well with those adapters. The second gen bodies do work a lot better.
Correct. And that's actually originally how I got to I was trying to figure out a way to get the Sigma 85 1.4, which is a really, really good portrait lens. I think really the big message that you should get if you're interested in starting out in portraiture is the lens matters so much more than the body. Getting a really good wide open lens, prime lens, is going to just take you so much further than any body. So honestly, like, you could get an APS-C and shoot with that 85 1.4. Just, you're not getting quite the depth of field you are with full frame. So
yeah, that's a huge thing. People ask me all the time what lens I use, or what some people ask what camera, but what they really mean is what lens, because it comes down to that low aperture. Even if you're getting like a 50 nifty, it's just that 1.8 aperture that would be helpful, and 1.4 is even better.
What about you, the wild Pukatan?
For portraiture, I'd probably just do like a very similar setup to what Brandon has, just like the Sony A7 and a like 85 1.8 in a 50 mil.
What you probably could do is if you got the A7, the 85, you could probably get another lens. Like you could get the 50 1.82.
Yeah, I would think of that 50 or like a 35.
All right. So I actually, the next category we had was landscape photos, and I full sended Nikon. I picked the Nikon D750 and the Tamron 70-200 f2.8, V2 if you can pick it up for the right price, or the V1.
Oh, wow. That's a pretty good setup. I like that. I like that you went 70-200 right off the bat, because that is like... that's money. Like,
and if you want it, there's lots of different 70-200 options. I just threw out the Tamron one because you get 2.8 and you get that $1,000-ish price point. But there is the Nikon 70-200 f4, which is around the same price. So that just would shrink down the size and probably sharpen things up a bit if that's what you wanted. So there's just a couple different options there.
Yeah.
Right. So for mine, I actually went with a similar, it's a slightly upgraded, but it was a setup that I actually used for about 4 years, 3 or 4 years. Only mine was with the original 70. So I'm going with the 70 Mark II and then the 24-105 Mark I and the 70-200 f4 non-IS version. That setup just goes a long, long way for a starting out landscape. You know, obviously you're not going full frame, so you're not getting all those benefits, but you're getting two really good lenses. You're getting a body that you can beat the heck out of. That 70 Mark II has the same durability rating that Canon gave the 1DX, which is their $6,000 camera body, their professional camera body. So, you know, it's really a, I just feel like someone who's just getting started out, they would be able to use that for several years and it did get a lot out of it.
Yeah. I actually went with the exact same setup, partially because I remember you having it. So that made a lasting impression on me, but yeah.
No, that's, I mean, I've really thought about it, and I'm like, you know, if someone were to ask me, like, you know, if they saw some of my photos mm-hmm. or something and they're like, well, what can I do to get into that? That's where I would put them.
Yeah. And I almost wanted to go full frame for it, but I basically didn't think it was needed because you get such a good focal length distance with that and you're still getting the megapixels and everything. So,
my focal length distance, and I went full frame with mine by doing the original A7, which I know I picked that for my portraiture one too, so it's a little bit redundant. But then since I've found in the mountains, I've never really needed to like use a lower aperture. Most of the time, my problem is not having enough range. So I did the kit lens that the Sony A7 came with. And then doing that, you could get it for like just under 1,000, and then you can pick up a 70-300 for about 1,000.
Oh, that's pretty yeah. sweet. Mm-hmm. That's good right there.
One that just came to my mind when you said that though was you could do like the A7 and then get the 24-240, which it's a huge focal length, but for starting out, that might not be a horrible yeah. one to do. And you
the
get
problem
a lot
with
range.
The 24-240 is it's just not quite as sharp.
It's sharper than you think. My problem with that is you're using the Sony kit lens, which is not going to be much sharper for your setup. But
no, it is. And I actually think the 24-240 is a little sharper than the kit lens. But it's the aperture is really slow, really slow.
But for landscapes...
yeah, for landscapes, it's not going to matter. It really, like, I do probably somewhere but in the 80% range of my shooting at F8. Mm-hmm. So, like, as long as the lens gets to F8, I'm happy. And, you know, I went with APS-C because I was going to mention this real quick because, like, again, you're picturing someone starting out. they're not going to notice the difference as much. Like the, if you're just starting out, the difference, the main thing you're going to notice between full frame and APS-C is going to be the depth of field. It's much, much more narrow in full frame. So you can blow out those backgrounds a lot better, you know, with APS-C, but you know, with landscape photography or, you know, that, yeah, landscape photography, you know, the depth of field doesn't matter as much. So, you know, the color depth and, you know, the, some of the other things that you're getting with full frame, you know, that's something that's, you're not going to really be able to appreciate until you're several years in, honestly.
The one thing I would point out about the setup with the Sony A7 is you could probably do a very similar setup with the other companies for a bit cheaper. Canon has a 70-300, a brand new one that just came out for $499 as opposed to around $1,000. So that's about half the price, which would give you more money to spend on your standard zoom. So you could do the 24-105 and the 70-300. And then you could do like a 60 Mark I or a Canon 80D or something like that.
Yeah, I guess that's probably true. I like the 24-240 option with the Sony though, because, well, it just seems to be newer and probably sharper than the equivalents otherwise. And also a other side note is it's something that you don't have to change lenses for.
Well, also, like, when we went to Dream Lake, nobody wanted to switch lenses because opening up your camera with the wind and all the snow and everything just sounded like the worst idea possible.
Yep. No, that's absolutely true. When you're going into a rough environment, like, the lens that's actually on your body in your pack is, like, a big mm-hmm. deal. Like, you know, I'm gonna pick the lens that's gonna be on my camera body that I'm probably gonna be using, you know, it's gotta be the most, the standard lens that I'll want to get that shot. And normally that's my biggest zoom. So I take a, 70, if I had a 70-200, that's probably what's gonna be on my camera in my pack most of the time. So that, you know, that's what I'm gonna grab those little moments of. I'm normally, if I'm shooting wider than that, I'm wanting to do a bigger setup, which means that there'd be more involved anyway. So, yeah.
Yeah, and actually, just so everybody out there that's wondering why we're talking about 70-200 so much for landscapes, you'd be surprised at how much you use that lens for landscapes. I went to South Africa this last January, or the January that we had before the one we just had. And I was super worried. I wanted to make sure I had a good 24-70. So I bought actually Kempers.
That's true.
I used it like barely. I used my 70-200 for like everything there. And most of what I was shooting was landscape stuff, some safari stuff, but I just had to deal with a 70-200.
Yeah, that 70-200, that focal range. And what's interesting is that it's really useful on both APS-C and full frame. You get a little more reach on the APS-C. It's more like a 100-300. And then it's a 70-200, obviously, on full frame. Which means like, so, and there's advantages to both, because that little bit of extra reach means that, you know, I can, you know, you can shoot a little further when you have an APS-C camera. But the 70, the extra wide, actually comes in really handy as well for not having to take that lens off, because I can take, and I shoot a lot of panoramas and stuff. And, you know, when you shoot a panorama at 70, it's really more like a 35. So you can kind of get everything in between with that lens. It's amazing.
Like later, you could even, if you bought just a camera and a 70-200, you could pick up a like 24 1.4 and just have a, like a really unique lens for doing some other stuff after that. And then you have the wide angle, you have a really low aperture. Peter McKinnon uses that kind of often. Mm-hmm. So
the next setup is actually kind of bridges well when talking about Peter McKinnon. So photo video setups, you know, we live in the age of kind of hybrid cameras and having to do a lot of hybrid work. So, you know, doing that on a budget's pretty difficult. And the one that I picked, I know this is going to be a little controversial, but I think that people, when they're looking at video, and I know that I've done this pretty much since I I started looking at videos seriously at all, as I've always thought the body is what I need to focus on, because that's where the quality is kind of decided on. But I actually decided that if I had a $2,000 budget, I would go with the Canon 80D. So, you know, 1080p is all that it does, but it does have that critical dual pixel autofocus, the flip out screen, the flip out touchscreen. I know after using the 60 Mark II how awesome that is for just usability. And then I did the Canon 24-105 f4 IS for your video lens, and then the Canon 70-200 f4 non-IS for kind of the stills lens. And then, of course, you could go back and forth, and you could use either for either if you wanted to.
Okay, fair. I didn't have quite the same opinion on video quality. So my setup is actually a A6500, and then I decided to not spend as much money on the glass, which is maybe weird for me, but a 35-1.8 and then a 50-1.8, both from Sony. So yeah, and you still have $100 left over after that, which I kind of did on purpose. So if you needed to pick up like a tripod or something, you basically had a little extra money for that.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Wild Pukatan?
I need a second. I'm checking some prices.
Hey, what about you, Summit Bid Photo?
All right, I can go. So for the run and gun video / photo hybrid thing, I actually went with the 80D and the Tamron 24-70
2.8
G2.
Oh, okay.
Because the stabilization on that thing is really nice. Now, I'm kind of assuming you're getting both of these used like new on Amazon. You can get it for around $2,000 for both of them, but I just thought this was a really good setup. It's a little like 24 is not super wide on that APS-C camera, but the dual pixel autofocus for, you know, especially I'm thinking a little bit run and gun too, because if you're a hybrid, you're probably running and gunning. It doesn't have the 4K, which is a little bit of a bummer, but I think I would trade the dual pixel for the 4K. And then the 2470 G2 Tamron is really, really stable. It's really, really light. And I feel like that combination, I would love to shoot video with that.
Yeah, so I guess to justify my choice with yours, I chose the A6500 because it has built-in image stabilization. That's why I chose the A6500 over the A6300, which there's a bit of a price difference there. And then I think I was aiming for maybe not as much run and gun. I was thinking maybe a little bit more artistic style video, where you're really messing with the focus plane and what's happening. And I went a little bit wider with my lenses. So 35 on a crop is still going to be a little zoomed, and same with 50. But I'm definitely looking at that depth of field, got the image stabilization, got the 4K. Those are my things.
Yep.
All right. So I got mine. I'm going with the Sony A6000, but I'm doing the Rokinon that Brandon has, so the Rokinon 2.8 14mm. Then I'm doing Sony's 50mm 1.8, Sony's 35 1.8, and then Sony's 70-300 again.
Oh, wow. Oh, okay.
All right.
I actually don't mind that.
It doesn't necessarily have 4K, but you have a lot of range. And then you have some low aperture stuff in there for the video work.
I think that the important thing that I was looking at with mine is you can get a decent video setup that shoots 4K for $2,000. The issue that I was consistently running into when I was thinking about this was the still side. A 35-1.8 and a 50-1.8 aren't that versatile for stills. I mean, they're fine. Like, it's not like you're going to get awful photos or anything. It's just I was thinking about this is both a photo setup and a video setup. And I think 4K is a little overrated anyway. So it's not surprising that I would do this knowing me, because I've kind of turned on 4K because I don't think it's necessary. But
I also think if you're beginning user having the equipment and like the like ability to edit 4K video is going to be a lot of work for you.
Oh, it's so much more trouble to edit.
As someone who gets paid to shoot video fairly often, if you are just starting out, do not do anything with 4K. It will only cause you grief unless it's you have a very specific reason, which when you're starting out, you don't. Like, those reasons you don't have. So, like, I have two 4K cameras. My 5D Mark IV shoots 4K. My A6300 shoots 4K. I almost always use the 4K on the 6300. I move back and forth on my 5D Mark IV, mostly shooting in 1080. But, you know, my reasons for shooting 4K are generally for editing. If I feel like I might need to crop in or change the framing or anything, I have not delivered anything in 4K yet. Nobody has needed or wanted 4K delivery. And if you're just giving yourself a lot of grief with being able to edit it, with being able to store it, it's really cool when you load it into your computer and you see how, you know, stinking sharp your footage is, but it is not worth it until you have, you know, really gotten your feet under you shooting video. So that's my two cents.
Yeah, I guess I kind of agree with you, Kemper, for the beginner part. Let's see, how should I phrase this? I had a very specific idea in mind. I was really thinking like a Peter McKinnon style photography where he kind of does that low aperture stuff. And I wanted the ability to crop in with 4K. That was almost solely the reason I chose a 4K.
I'm not being critical of your setup. That's actually that's really good setup. I'm wanting to hit home more because I feel like someone who's a perspective camera buyer, the 4K is a major buzzword. And I think there's more advantages to the 6500 than beyond 4K that make it a great camera. And the 6300 too. I mean, I think the stabilization probably makes the, what I used the 6300 for, I didn't need stabilization. So I decided to go ahead and save the $400. But, you know, if you're unless you have a very specific reason to not need stabilization, get the stabilization. But I feel like people buy cameras because they say 4K on them and they have no idea what that means. They have no idea how to use it. And it's kind of frustrating because good cameras, good video cameras are kind of getting ignored because they don't have that 4K stamp. And honestly, the 6000 is a really good video camera. Like Peyton brought into the, you know, I use that for video, for pro video for, you know, over a year. And it's great. So, and you know, nobody talks about that for video because it doesn't have the 4K when it's.
And to be completely honest, if you really want the 4K, it's like $300 more. And if you're already spending $2,000, you could probably swing that if you just waited a little bit longer to get your setup.
Fair enough.
Good point.
All right. So our next setup category is general photography. And I kind of pulled a crazy one here and suggested Sony for this, but I do think that this would be a really nice general photo setup. So I did the Sony A7. A7 II, if you can pull it off, but I was getting mixed results on getting it for 2000, but it's really close to 2000 anyway. And then the Sony 28-1.8, the Sony 50-1.8, the really cruddy one, like the $150 one, and then the Sony 85-1.8, general photography.
Okay. I went with just the 6D. And the 24-105, the second edition one with that was just, it seems like such a classic kind of beginner setup for a general camera. You get more than just 24-70. You have to work with the F4 aperture, but I think if you got it used, I basically took it for new. You could get like a 50 mil or something in there too, to give you two different types of photography. And actually, to go back to the video one real quick, not to be that guy, but I like the 50 and the 35 for doing portraiture. So video is good with that. Portraiture is good with that. I think it wouldn't be the worst thing for landscapes, but that's just my opinion.
So what I did for general photography is just because I'm kind of intrigued with it, I did the Fuji X-T2 with the kit lens, which comes in right at 2000. It's not maybe the most versatile, but like I picture a general photographer being someone who just really wants to have fun taking pictures. And those Fujis are just, we kind of talked about it earlier, but they're just so fun to take pictures with, you know, all the dials and the they have kind of the unique color look and all that stuff. So I just kind of was like, someone who's a general photographer and they want to just have fun with the camera, you cannot beat Fuji for just having fun with the camera. So that's what I went with.
I'm going to go with the Nikon D750 and their 24 to 120. Feels like it just gives you a good range from like wide to not necessarily telephoto, but like pretty zoomed in. And then you get decent video. I mean, it's 1080 again, but like still decent video, and you get a decent like still camera too.
Yeah, I mean, that's the Nikon that they kind of used for video for a while. I mean, F-stoppers used it too, didn't they?
They used it as their primary video camera. And that's the thing about like a lot of these productions that actually come across really professional. I think that we want to think that what's going on is that they have this gear because that's an easy answer. Like, oh, I can do that if I have this camera, or I can do that if I have that piece of gear. And really, that's not exactly true, because going off topic a little bit, I'm sorry to kind of loop back around towards video, but when I was kind of thinking about how I would like to get into video, I was like watching videos on it and stuff, and I kept getting kind of pushed towards 4K and Micro Four Thirds and stabilization and all this kind of, I think Kemper used the word trigger words earlier, and it's like, oh, you have to have this. I find this invaluable. I have to have that. And you're like, well, if I get that, I can just do what they do. And that's really not the answer to all of your problems, is just buying what everybody else is telling you to buy. I guess I just kind of undermined this whole conversation.
No, you're making a good point, though. I think people think the camera is what makes the photo. And that's a huge mistake beginners make. I was super worried about it when I started. I got a T3i, but I was trying to even upgrade like to the D60, or what was it, Kemper? You were kind of around
60D.
Yeah, that I thought that would I thought that would somehow make a difference. Not even kind of. Full frame is useful, and just better equipment is always going to be useful. But you can do something basically with any camera, especially if you get primes and stuff where you get the low aperture if you need it, or if you need telephoto, get the telephoto. But
I think that, so I feel like there's two sides to every coin. You have the people telling you that gear is going to solve all your problems. Then you have the other people who say that the gear literally doesn't matter and you can shoot with anything. And I think that neither is true as normal. The answer lies somewhere in the middle. I think if you're interested in photography, I would, really hone in on kind of what you want to do with it, and then find out the gear that's going to get you kind of what you want. But I think that it kind of starts with being very much self-examining and thinking about, what it is that you want. Because like, if you hear that you're like, oh, I can shoot, with anything, and then you go out and buy a very inexpensive DSLR with the kit lens, you're probably going to be disappointed when stuff doesn't turn out exactly like those photographs you were seeing, especially if you're shooting people. And, but on the other end, you can spend an extra $400 that on 4K and not know what to do with it. So I really think that, you need to kind of think about, and that's one of the reasons why we kind of broke this down into segments of like, oh, this is a beginner setup for this type of photographer, because there's really not a have all end all setup out there, you know, and we're going to get this into a minute when we talk about our dream setups. Like, even, you know, with an unlimited budget, it's still really hard to figure out what it is you need to get what you are looking for. And it, you know, so be very self-examining, and think about what it is that you're wanting to do with a camera that you're looking to buy. And that's going to kind of help you kind of get on the right track in general.
Yeah, I think having a goal in mind of what type of photography you want to do will be the most helpful thing for you. I mean, there's always going to be the people that just want to be able to take pictures of everything, and that's perfectly fine. But if you're going into it and you know you want to take portraits, pretty much know you're going to want a 1.8 like aperture at least. So if you can pick up a T3i or something super cheap, or whatever Canon makes now, and get a like 50mm 1.8, that might be a good setup for you. And that might be a really good setup for you in comparison to picking up just the kit lens, because it's not going to give you the effect you want. You are going to want the blurred background. If you need to go full frame right from the beginning and get a cheaper full frame with a 1.8 or an 85-1.8, that might be what you need to do. Or if you need telephoto, you might need that from the beginning, kind of. But I guess you can work with what you have, though. That's something I think that gets super underrated. Mm-hmm.
So I guess with that, let's kind of jump into some of our dream setup ideas. And I think that in my head, you know, we were talking about before about examining what you want to do, like when you're looking at buying equipment, you got to look at what you want to do with that equipment. And, you know, when I was getting this together, thinking about what I wanted to list out on this, I was like, well, what would my dream project be? Like, what would my dream shoot be to go and shoot? And I was like, well, it would be an adventure. Like, it would be going down to Patagonia and shooting somebody climbing something, probably, and climbing it with them, preferably. But like, that's kind of the thing I'd like to do, is shoot sport climbing and just more adventure out in the wilderness kind of stuff. So what I decided on, and this is a little controversial, probably, the Canon 1DX Mark II. However, that could be swapped out for the 5D Mark IV with very little issue. It's just, it's a dream setup, so I full sended the 1DX. And the Tamron 24-70 VR G2, because I wanted that stabilized 24-70 range. And then a 70-200 f/2.8, preferably the Canon, Canon's actual one. And then my fourth item, because I think the one restraint we're keeping here is that it's got to be kept down to four items. And my last item is a little controversial, probably, but I threw in the GH5S because I have some dream stuff I'd like to do with video. So I guess if it's a dream setup, I probably want that camera. And I do get 4K 60 frames per second in two cameras. So if you're going to do 4K, you probably need 4K 60. So that's what I did.
That's fair.
Very nice.
Yeah, I guess I did a similar thing to you with kind of thinking out what I'd want to do. And I'm mainly a portrait photographer, but I do other like types of photography. So I wanted something that I could use for landscape. I could use for basically anything, product photography, video if need be. But I also preferenced portrait photography pretty heavily. So as much as I wanted to choose the A7R Mark III, I ended up choosing the Sony A9 just because it doesn't have – I mean, it has 24 megapixels, so that's enough. But it just has such good low-light quality. It's light. It has 4K. It has image stabilization built into the body. It's just a beautiful camera overall. And then I chose two primes. I did a Zeiss 35-14 for my kind of wider prime. And then I did the Sony 85-14 G Master. So getting that really low aperture 1.4s. And then to finish it off, I got the 70-200 2.8 from Sony. And that's, again, kind of going back to what we were talking about earlier, where landscape, it's generally you kind of want that 70-200 range. Not always. So I do have a 35 if I need that for something else. And then again, it's 1.4. So maybe it wouldn't be the best for Astro, but you could probably get away with it.
So for mine, I picked the A9 as well, just because I don't really have a purpose for a crazy high megapixel camera. I have more of a purpose for a camera that's fairly well at doing things all around, which I feel like the A9 does that pretty well. And then I went with the 16 to 35. And then this was a little bit of a weird bit for me because we're limited to 4 items. So I decided to skip over getting the 24 to 70 and go to the 70 to 200, but get the 70 to 200 with the 2x converter. So you have from 70 to 400 and 16 to 35. And I figured if I really get in this situation where I need that kind of like 50 to 70 range, I mean, that 35 to 70 range in between there, I could probably be able to move in most situations. There'd be a few situations where I wouldn't be able to move forwards or backwards. But theoretically, most of the time you can.
Yeah, that's nice. And kind of a side note, the Sony has it's perfect conversion, right, for the teleconverter, like no loss in sharpness and no loss in autofocus. Am I correct, Kemper?
It's very similar. Canon and Sony actually are both very similar with the teleconverter. I've actually used both, and you do lose a little bit. If you had a 70-200 and you took, you know, you shot at 100 with the teleconverter and then at 200 without, you'd notice a difference. But I think you'd be hard pressed to tell a difference unless you were putting them side by side. So,
okay, that's kind of what I thought. What'd you end up getting?
Okay, so mine was kind of tricky because I got, you know, I just got really torn because my thought was is like, oh, I'd be going to someplace like shoot landscapes in the Himalayas, something like that, like in the Everest region of Nepal or something like that. And so I got kind of torn on what I wanted to shoot with. But the first one that the camera that I decided I wanted to do was the 5D Mark IV. And it's not just because it's the one I have. I really like the 30 megapixels. I like working with that camera, so I think I'd stick with it. For lenses, I'd start out with, I'd want to get really, really solid Astros while I was there, just because it'd be really fun. So I went with the 14-1.4 from Sigma. I think it's a 1.4. Is it a 1.8?
It's a 1.8.
It's 1.8. I'm sorry. Yeah. As soon as I said it, I was like, yeah, it's a 14-1.8. So, and that thing takes beast Astros. And then for my other two items, I needed to look up something real quick.
Just a side note while he looks that up. Sony, or I don't know who did it, but they took the A9, the Sony A9, and they put the 14-1.8 on there, and they were able to do a kind of crappy, but they were able to do a handheld astrophoto, which is crazy impressive.
Oh yeah, that was crazy impressive. So for my other two items, I decided to go, so I'm skipping from 14 clear to 70. I'm going with the Canon 70-200 2.8 because honestly, like that middle ground, I just don't use that often. And I just really love that lens. I know I would hate not having it. And then since this is truly a dream setup, it's not something I'm ever going to be able to do. But for my fourth thing, I went with the Canon 200-400 f4 with the built-in 1.4x extender, which takes it out to 500-something, I think.
No, yeah, 540 or 560.
Yeah, 540. And that is, like, super fast for that much zoom. F4 is not normally fast, but for that much zoom, it's super fast, really, really sharp. And I just think I'd probably wind up using that thing most of the time. You know, get those, that great compression and, you know, all that. So, and I just would love to use that lens sometime. So that's what I went with. But just so people know, that's an $11,000 lens. So like, I would be scared to breathe on it.
Yeah, let alone bring it to the Himalaya.
Yeah, let alone bring it to the Himalaya. Like, that'd be some crazy insurance policy. But yeah, so since it was dream setup, that's what I went with.
Another thing I kind of thought about, just to throw in a couple more hypotheticals, is doing two bodies and two lenses for a situation like that. Because if I went to the Himalayas, I would not want to be taking my lenses off. I know there would be times where I'd probably be okay, but I'd probably prefer to have, like, if I went Canon 5D Mark IV and then the X-D1.
1DX.
1DX, yep, sorry, mix the stuff around. And then I'd get maybe a 35 to, or not 35, sorry, 16 to 35, 2.8 on one of them. Mm-hmm. And then I don't know if I'd want to do 70 to 200 or if I would do, in like a hypothetical like this, if I would just skip to the 200 to 400 because, oh, I don't know, that'd just be a hard choice.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
I've got a question for you guys. Do you think that they could make like a 200 to 400 f/5.6 or something like that that would be a little cheaper? I mean, they make the 100 to 400 that is pretty sharp.
I've actually heard that that's on their radar, that they're working on a new L lens, but not supposed to be top of the line. So I think they probably have, because Nikon has the 200 to 500 f/5.6, which people love that lens, and Nikon's the only company that has that lens in their lineup. I think that Canon kind of has their sights set on that lens with a possible one, but so yeah, I could definitely see that happening.
Yeah, and even if it wasn't a maybe a 200 to 400 zoom, but even if they did like a 400 5.6 or a 300 5.6, that'd be a lens that would be just easier to get, like a new version. I feel like I've seen those before, but
yeah, they have a Canon has a 400 5.6, but it's on the older side, although it's really, really sharp. So, but I don't think the autofocus is quite as good as some of their new stuff. So,
yeah. And I think they could probably produce it cheaper now.
Right.
So,
right. Yeah, almost certainly that's true. Yeah, they could.
But I think that's something that camera companies just kind of either avoid or forget about something. But Sony too, if they made, or not even Sony, Sigma, they made something like that, that would just be a huge hit.
Yep. Didn't Nikon actually just release earlier this year, they released a 180 to 400 with a 2X teleconverter in it.
Oh, did they? I did not know about them.
Yeah, they released it at CES, I believe.
Okay, cool.
For the Olympics.
Who did the sports lens? Was it Sigma who did the 120 to 300 f/2.8?
Oh, yeah.
Because if you could do a 2x converter on that, that would still bring you to 5.6, and yeah, you'd have 600 millimeters.
Yeah, something like that. Crazy. Yeah.
Well, actually, I was wanting to ask you guys earlier about the new 14 to 24 2.8. Do you think that Sigma is going to try and produce some 2.8s that aren't quite the same focal length for the other two zooms in the Trinity, like something like maybe I think a 35 to 105 2.8 could be amazing, even if it's big.
That'd be really nice.
I was kind of wanting Sony to maybe pick up that, not the exact same concept, but if Sony were to do something like a 50 to 100 2.8, they could probably produce that a lot cheaper and engineer it more, because there's the whole problem with the E-mount being just too small, and if they could, and too close to the mirror too, sorry. If they could figure out a way to just maybe narrow down the millimeters just a little bit.
Also, a lot of times you get really like kind of stupid overlap. Like you buy a 24 to 70 and a 16 to 35 and you have that awkward like 10 millimeters of overlap that you don't necessarily need. Like, yeah, I mean, I guess you'd have to change lenses, which it kind of reduces that in some situations. But it's kind of like you're paying for a little bit more focal range that you're probably not going to use because you already have a different lens on.
Right. Yep. That's absolutely true. And that's why I like that 14 to 24. It just fits in any system you've got a little bit better because you get that little extra wide, but you're not like, you don't need it to go more unless you really don't want to have a standard zoom, which, that's your choice. Like actually right now in my setup, I have a 16 to 35 and a 51.4. I don't have that 24 to 70 zoom range. And, I'm seeing how that's working right now. It's working great. So, that works out nicely for me, but like if I were doing more traditional like wedding photography, like I'd probably rather not have the redundancy, honestly.
Yeah. I think if I were trying to do both my like kind of fashion portrait stuff and wedding photography very consistently, I think the setup I'd actually do would be something like a 16 to 35 in defense of the 16 to 35. I'll explain in a second. A 51.4 and then a 70 to 200 2.8.
Yeah.
Just to cut out that kind of, I feel like with a 14 to 24, you lose something if you don't have a 70 to 200, sorry, a 24 to 70. But if I cut out the 24 to 70, which is a lens I'm not actually super into, I prefer primes in that area and actually in general. But if I wanted to be able to do weddings and my kind of portrait stuff, I'd use the 51.4, which would maybe be not quite the telephoto I'd want it to be, but good enough. Yeah. And then have the super wide, but with still a 35 millimeter area, and then have my 70 to 200.
Yeah, I think that's fairly smart, I think. And I think you're right. That 16 to 35 is probably always going to have a place, but I think it's ultimately going to be with people who don't want to have that middle zoom. They want to have the wide, but they want other options in that middle range. And then in telephoto, I think that's more the place it has because, being able to get that 35 in the same lens as your 16, that's nice. That makes your job a little easier. But if you're using a series of zooms to get the job done, the 14-24 makes much more sense.
Honestly, I don't see much of a problem with having something like a 16 to 35 as a trio with a 35 to 100 and a 100 to 200.
Yeah, that's something I think would be – I don't think Canon or Nikon would ever do that. Sony, I think, should have done something like that, just loosened up the – stereotypical lens millimeter range and shortened it just enough that it was easier to engineer some of these lenses, because I know the R&D that goes into Sony lenses is dumb because of the E-mount and because of the mirrorless system. But I don't know if I would see that in any other camera, to be honest.
And they would probably be significantly cheaper.
Yeah, I mean cheaper. I don't know how significantly, but.
All right. So that's going to wrap us up for this episode. I'd like to let you guys know some new stuff that I've set up over the week. We are now on YouTube. We're going to be putting every new episode up on YouTube probably a day or so after it goes up on iTunes. And we also have an email if you want to email us your rage emails about how dumb we are and how we get everything wrong in the world. You can send that to I'll put all that stuff in the description if you want to see that, because I don't actually remember what it is right at the top of my head.
Classic.
And then we also have an Instagram, so you can follow us there. We're going to be featuring each of the four hosts' photography over the, probably about a post every day. We'll announce when we post new stuff. If you want to use that as a way to know when we post new stuff, that's going to be XComp Podcast at XComp Podcast on the Instagrams. So
make sure also to just subscribe to us in iTunes, and then also throw out a rating. That will help us a lot in, growing a follower base, and as long as you like it. I mean, if you don't like it, then just
I mean, if you're gonna do 5 stars, rate us, but anything less, maybe don't. No, I'm just kidding.
No, bring on the hate.
Nah, and if there's any topics, like Toby was saying, the email, just send us an email if you want to hear us talk about anything.
And I believe the email is exposurecompensation@gmail.com. I think I pulled it off, but I'm not. Actually, you know what? Let's just find out. I can cut this part.
Forgets to cut it.
You better know.
If I want.
No, you should leave it. Actually, it'd be hilarious.
My favorite is seeing like YouTube videos and stuff where the person's like, "I'll cut this out," and they don't.
No, I see that all the time. It's actually like
the thing is they literally have to cut it in. Like they drag it into the timeline. Like it's not like they're cutting it out like we are. So it is xcomp.podcast. So xcomp.podcast@gmail.com is what I was able to pull off.
Okay, cool. Sounds great.
All right. So send us your ideas and your hate and tell Brandon he's a hoser.
All right.
Hurtful.
Bye.
Truthful, but hurtful.
Thanks for listening.
Bye.
And follow me on Instagram.
Bye.
Bye. I hate you all.